OFC Podcast Radio.
Welcome to OFC Podcast Radio, where every beat, every word, and every laugh is a celebration of our journey. Join Gina the Great, your joy curator, Farrah Hammond Freeman, the head honcho, and me, Queen Kaya, your soul sister. Stay tuned for a dose of melanated excellence right here on OFC Podcast Radio. But before we do anything else, we're going to bless our show and the kings and queens listening.
Let the words of my mouth be not of myself, but let them be guided by my energy. Hotep, amen, ashe, guys, blessed, melanated, rising, my people. I am so grateful to life. I'm grateful to God, our creator, and I'm grateful to our ancestors for creating another opportunity for us to be able to be on here today. And I just ask that the words of my mouth be not of myself, but let them be guided by the guides that come from inside of me and from inside of Gina the Great. And just let, I ask that today's show, let it be very uplifting, let it be educational, let it be entertaining, but most importantly, let it be empowering for each and every one of our listeners out there as we send out that spirit of love, light, unity, strength, great health, wealth, and peace. Hotep, amen, ashe, aibobo. Gina the Great, qu'est-ce qui se passe, yo?
Everything and nothing. I'm a little tired, but I just think it's I'm over the winter a little bit, a lot of it. But you know, I'll say that I appreciate the days are getting longer, so that's really helping. Every little bit counts, guys.
I was like, they are. I guess that's something that's happening.
Okay. Yes, because then you realize it's not pitch black at 4, and now it's not pitch black at 4:30. And then, you know, soon it's just not pitch black. And then, oh, all of a sudden, it's light till 9. Okay, hello,
okay,
summer.
Okay, all right, talk about it.
I'm telling you, it's the countdown as of, what's winter solstice, the 21st?
I think it's the 21st, yeah.
Yeah, it's 21st, right? So from the 21st, I know that that's like our shortest day that we'll have the year. Mm-hmm. And like, you know.
It's all uphill
like
from there.
All uphill. Although, I feel like that saying is flawed. Mm.
Yeah, it should be downhill from there, I guess, yeah, technically, because it should be easier. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you're right. You're
so
right,
with gravity there, but you know, yeah. However that is.
Yes. So Oh, sorry for cutting you. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say I was gonna actually talk about that, like jumping into accountability. But I will say this though, mm-hmm. I did do. I started an exercise program off of the Nike trainer. Oh, Heavenly Father, I did a lower body workout that called upon muscles that I clearly haven't been using in these last 6 to 12 months. And like, you know how normally after you do a workout, like you feel it the next day and then the day after that? I felt the same day, bro.
Wow. Immediately.
Same day. Immediate effect into the next day. Yes. But then, you know, that was fine. But like, I love it because a few weeks back, right, when I played the saying, like, when we're working out and you feel weak, it's an oxymoron because you're actually getting stronger. So even though it feels difficult, like that's just a step towards being stronger. So, you know.
Well said.
But sorry, I digress. But we're speaking on values, right?
So we are. So now, today we said we're going to touch on accountability. And now, guys, not to completely confuse everybody. So we are still in the top three values of the OFC, but we went in kind of a janky order because we did 1-3 together, and now we're doing 2. Okay. And so just to recap what you guys might have heard in, I guess, in previous shows now at this point, we addressed honesty and transparency. So that's value 1, honesty. Value 3 is transparency. And now we are at accountability. Okay, so now I'm reading this off the OFC website in terms of what we have as accountability. At the OFC, accountability means taking responsibility for your actions, owning your decisions, and being answerable for the outcomes, whether positive or negative. Now, there is something that we do when homeschooling in Zynga. And we ask her, what does it mean to be accountable? Now, I have to give a shout out to Nipsey Hussle because having that conversation with my daughter was based off of a recording that I heard him. He was in an interview with, I cannot remember who, but they were asking, about him as a father and whatever the case and type of legacy that he wants to leave for his child. And there was three top things that he had said, and one that he would tell his daughter daily. And one of the things was accountability and what does it mean to be accountable. And in a very easy response, it's doing the right thing when nobody's listening. When no one's watching, sorry, doing the right thing
Watching.
when nobody's watching. That resonates, right? And that's why we made it one of the key response, one of the key values within the OFC, shoot number two, technically. And it's because we need to be accountable to ourselves within this community if we're going to be functional as a community, if we're going to function as a community. But not just do we need to be accountable to ourselves on a physical, we need to be accountable to ourselves on a spiritual. And now, what does that mean? That means to understand what karma is. That means doing the right thing even when no one's watching, because you know there's always somebody or something watching. There's a peace that we get from doing the right thing, and there's a bit of a weird vibe that we get when we know we're doing the wrong thing, despite like when we know that we're doing the wrong thing and we're trying to do it on the down low. There's a vibe that we get that is our intuition, our inner being giving us that, hey, you know better than this. And as a people, once we can respect that and accept that and walk in that truth, the karmic reaction, what comes to us, what happens to us from there is next level, so to speak, because you're planting enough positive karmic seeds that no matter what is happening, despite the circumstances, life is will continue to unfold and open for you in a positive way. But when we're not accountable to each other and we're doing things that we know we shouldn't be doing, the opposite is also true. And then we wonder and we ask ourselves, like, why did this happen to us, or why is that happening to us? But we're ignoring the fact that that we're not being, I almost want to say, as good as we can be as beings on this planet, right? So it's something to be said when we talk about accountability, we use it almost like on like what's I'm looking at? It's like we say the word, but we don't necessarily internalize it. We don't acknowledge. We don't apply it in our day-to-day way of being. And I think it's funny because when we were talking about honesty and stuff like that, and we talk about little white lies, being accountable to ourselves and being accountable to others is in line with that. If we are not taking the time to ensure, or being, if we're not being intentional about being accountable to ourselves and to others, we are doing ourselves and our future selves a huge disservice. Does that make any sense, Jen? Am I making sense? Am I talking crazy? I could be talking crazy.
No, you're making sense. You're making
Yeah.
sense.
Okay. Now, within the OFC, when we are doing business with each other, what does it mean to be accountable? It simply means that if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. If I can't, I'm going to say I can't. It happens at times where you could have thought that, yes, you know what? I actually can do XYZ. I could take this on. And then the reality hits and it's like, oh, shoot, I can't. Now, w unfortunately, what certain people do, they to avoid disappointing another person, they'll try to figure this, that, and the third, do that. But then, or unfortunately, they just won't be honest about the situation. But the point of the matter is, if you're going to be accountable, you have to be like, I dropped the ball on that. I take responsibility for that. Now, let that resonate for a second. Like, I take responsibility for that. That is another way of of acknowledging that you understand what it means to be accountable to your actions. You take responsibility. And it's not just take responsibility in words. So say, I take responsibility. Now you take responsibility and your actions show that you understand that you're responsible and that you're looking to resolve the whatever circumstance or situation. So it is really taking accountability. In other words, it's taking responsibility for your actions. And now, once we're able to do that as beings, as adults, we're able to set that example for the future generation coming up. We're able to now show them what it means to sometimes you got to take it to the chin. You got to accept that, yes, all right, this might not feel too awesome. I like it doesn't look good. It is what it is. But I'm gonna man up to the situation. Like, yes, I'm gonna say I broke that. Yes, I'm gonna say I dropped that. Yes, I'm gonna say it was my bad for being behind schedule. My bad for dropping the ball on this thing. I thought I could do this. I'm gonna take responsibility for it, and this is how I'm gonna rectify the situation. No one is expecting anybody to be perfect, but we are expecting people to take accountability, take responsibility for their actions, and create a resolve to show that yes, I am aware of what I did, and this is my steps and my efforts to fix the problem. With that mindset, with that understanding, yo, Gina the Great, as a community, we can do so much because it's like now we could rely on each other, we could trust each other again, we could trust each other to do the we could trust each other to put our best foot forward. Where unfortunately, what has happened to society is that we are so accustomed to people not taking responsibility, not being accountable, that we don't trust anything or anybody really anymore. Like, and that's really, and that's, it's a shame because we need each other in order to thrive and survive, not just survive on this planet, but to thrive as a people, as a species on this planet, right? So it's like, so that's why accountability is so high up there, for us in terms of, number two of our values within the OFC community. It is because we are striving to create a kind of our own, call our own little community utopia, our community of excellence, where every individual who joins the OFC understands that they have a responsibility to themselves and to others, and that one of their main responsibilities is to be accountable. So that is just my zhuzh, my part,
Your
in this,
take.
yeah, my take in this whole thing. But Gina, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the topic when it comes to accountability.
Yeah, so when we talked about when we had the discussion about speaking on the values, and we kind of said, okay, honesty and transparency goes together and accountability is a different thing. And as I sat and kind of looked at what accountability means for me, I recognized that actually all three of those values are kind of a pillar to the basis of having a proper relationship and good communication as well in and of itself. And I say that because when we talked about honesty last time, I talked about self-awareness and how a lot of times we lack the self-awareness of being honest with oneself. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand with accountability, whereas the lack of accountability can also live between it can live within the lack of self-awareness or an ego issue. Right. And I say that because a self-awareness example one day where I was walking down the street with some colleagues and my boss was like, one of his pet peeves was when when he was walking with his wife and she's just not aware of her surroundings and like so when people walk on a sidewalk and you're kind of just zigzagging around like you own the sidewalk and there's no one else there, like have the courtesy of just knowing what's your surroundings so that you're not blocking someone while they're trying to walk, kind of you step aside and whatnot. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then so going back to when we were out and having a walk after happy hour, and like he was aware someone was coming behind us and he kind of just nudged me to the side. I was like, whoa, I'm not self-aware. Like I wasn't self-aware at that space, in that moment in time. When you think, because when you said it's like, oh, I do that, and then when you're in the practice, you're like, oh, I don't do that. And then now, like, I walk like I drive. I check
Your blind
my
spots.
blind spots. You know what I mean? Just trying to like, because we're sharing this world. We're sharing these experiences and we're sharing these things. And so, sometimes I get that it's difficult to take accountability, especially when you feel like if you were wronged in a situation. And I do strongly believe, and life has taught me that. In every action, there's a reaction in every situation. someone has a responsibility in that, in the outcome of whatever that may be. And sure, we can weigh who was more wrong or who could have done this differently. But then, you know, there's a question of what's more important. Is it being right or solving the issue, right? Or coming to a resolution? And so when you're able to push your ego aside, when you're able to listen to what remove your blind spots, right, or your blinders, I think accountability becomes more and more easy. And if you wanna take an exercise of how to be accountable, look back at a lot of different situations that you've had in your life where maybe you didn't find resolve or something happened, and like go and find your accountability in that. And again, it doesn't have to, don't to the point where you want to like come out of that like, oh my gosh, I'm such a bad person. Accountability doesn't mean that you're just this like completely always wrong, always in the wrong or whatnot. It's just, it could be as simple as like, oh, you know, I had good intentions when I did this, but that made that person feel bad. And so I'm accountable for that, right? Mm. So I can recognize that I should have said that differently, or like I didn't consider your feelings when XYZ was happening because I was in my own feelings, or, you know, and that's their inner accountability too. Sometimes you don't, like, you have to account for the fact that I reacted to that way because of past traumas or my own feelings or my own biases and prejudices, whatever that may be in life. And, you know, when you start doing that exercise, your ego gets a lot smaller and you're able to take accountability and let's move forward towards a resolution as opposed to just wanting to always be right.
Wow. And so basically it's like that ego, I think it's like, it has such a hold on humanity. I think that is one of the things, like, and I think the challenge for a lot of people is they don't even realize it. They don't even acknowledge that it's like their egos that are more driving, and instead of their higher consciousness, instead of their heart and sort of their spirit, they're really driven by this entity that is the ego, that is an entity as well. And
that's learned behavior too, though.
Yeah.
And like, and I say that because I see certain things in different cultures. Like, as you guys know, I'm very big about observing other cultures. A very Western world of thinking, like, oh, we're number one and we're champions and we're bred to be competitive. And maybe competitive, like everyone has little competition in them. But when you're born and bred to kind of be a community, I think you have less of that ego. As opposed to like always wanting to be on top and like we're the best, the smartest, the strongest. The this, that, and the third, as opposed to just like we're the most loving, happy, structured, you know, environment, if you will.
Yeah, I think a lot of us have created this this false identity, and anytime it becomes challenged, or you have to do something counter what you have now, you know, this false identity that you created, you double down. So it's like admitting wrong for a person who is, who has a tendency of shit always feeling like they're right, or who is, who plays the role of a quote unquote leader. Sometimes they feel like they can't show that they're wrong. Because the fact that, that might change a perception on how a person sees them. If I admit that I'm wrong about this, that maybe now I am not fit to be a leader. Where I feel the opposite is also true. I think the signs of a great leader is an individual who could, one, admit wrong, two, like be like, oh shoot, I did not know that. Actually, let's move differently, so to speak. I think these are things that I think there's a certain amount of vulnerability that kind of is associated with accountability. Is that,
and I'm speaking to the choir with that too, because like, I mean, as a Capricorn, you know, I don't love being wrong, I'll tell you that much.
I don't love being wrong. I hear that.
I definitely don't love being wrong. I will admit, I like it even less having to apologize when I'm wrong. But you do it anyway, because what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong, and then you adjust, right? And you try your best not to put yourself in a disposition where you have to be apologetic, but it's gonna happen, folks. And you know, like when it does, it doesn't cost you anything to just say,
it doesn't.
"Hey, my bad."
Yeah, my bad. And the thing is, you'd be surprised, because that's a little win for your spirit. That's an act that is real. Like when you're able to acknowledge that and take that accountability and own up to whatever it is, you level up. You put a notch on your belt. Like you develop new brain cells. Like you start doing things that you're like, whoa, 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 this feels completely different. But the reality is because like, what you're slowly doing, and this is again why we're doing all these things, is to plant these seeds for you all who tune in. You, how do I put this? There's a value in leveling up past your physical understanding of yourself, past the identity that you've created. There's such a huge value in understanding that you are more than what you see in the mirror. So I'm more than just the Farrah Hammett Freeman that I've created here. I'm more than just a father, a husband, a community builder. There's so much more to me beneath the eye. Like there's more to me that than what I have come to understand. And that thing that is more to me is governed by certain universal laws. And as soon as I detach from what I think is myself, my image, my personality, my characters, and I just go back to what is genuinely right about being an individual, being a loving person, being a spiritual entity. Part of being a spiritual entity is understanding my connection to other beings on this planet and understanding my responsibility to each and every entity on this planet, and understanding that, yeah, if I do something wrong, I'll take accountability for it, because I would want that other entity to do the same in interacting with me. And I see myself in that entity. I see myself in the whole. I see my energy is connected to all this energy. So it is better that I just take responsibility, do the right thing, and learn so that I do better moving forward. You know, and as I'm closing, not to be completely extreme, but I can't help but tie this into our responsibility to the planet. I know in our values, we're going to go there, so I don't want to take too much time on it. But guys, be mindful. Like when you're being accountable, simple things like even acknowledging that every living entity on this planet deserves a certain amount of respect. I'm gonna leave it at that. So, Gina the Great, today we have a fun episode. As usual, though, is fun. But the guests that we have with us today, they're no strangers to the show. We're talking about the one and only West Can Folk Performing Company. They've been keeping the culture alive for over 40 years. They have a bunch of new programs, a lot of new initiatives going on that they want to share with the community. Again, guys, if you're out there and you're listening, you have children, you want to get them involved into West Can, because one, it creates an awesome social activity just to get your youths together. That is always fun. But not just that, it does help to infuse the culture in them, whether it be through drum, whether through dance, whether through song. They leave with something. They leave knowing a little bit more about themselves. And a lot of times what's happening in these schools is that our children, there's void of culture in their schools. So, you know, unless you're going that extra mile, and you know, like our Chinese brothers and sisters or Jewish brothers and sisters that have those Saturday schools that they make sure that their children know their culture and they're being educated their culture despite being here in Canada and learning about Canada stuff. Unless you're doing that, the next best thing is to get your children involved in West Can, because then at least there's a bit of culture that's being infused with them. So into them. So with that, guys, let's take a pause for the cause, and we'll be back with Parlay with the People. If your goal is to purchase a car and to make the process as simple as possible, just get a car broker, guys. You just get a car broker. Big shout out to our homeboy, Hamsdale Jacques, the owner of HJCourtierAuto.com. That's HJCourtierAuto.com.
If you're a small to medium-sized business and you're getting started and you're ready to go to that next level, what do you need? You need a phone line and you need a website. Think mainstream Digicom. They got all your telecommunication needs checked. MainstreamDigicom.com. You're trying to get out on the web. You're trying to understand how to navigate through ads. Check out Java Logics for all your marketing, your digital marketing. Where would we be without Preston? I don't even know. Check out Java Logics. I give thanks to Preston for what he's done for the OFC. The amount of positive reviews we've gotten from all his referrals, we're proud to stand behind his work. Check out javalogics.com. No, it's not just because he's my brother. It's because you can't talk hip-hop in Montreal without saying M-City Solo. Guys, check out his latest project, In My Feels, available on mcitysolo.com. If it's not one of the hardest new EPs to hit Montreal, come and let me know. You already know. It's your boy, Faro, bigging up, mcitysolo.com. Keeping the culture alive. I gotta give thanks to West Can Folk Performing Company. For the last 40 years plus, they've been promoting our culture through song, drum, and dance, educating youth, the children, the seniors. Just check them out, westcanfolk.com. DeVito, WizKid, Burna Boy. Those are just some of the big names that's blessed Montreal thanks to Afrobeats Montreal. Definitely check out Afrobeats MTL for all concerts, show listings, everything that has to do with Afrobeats in the city. Check out Afrobeats MTL. One full circle. We are the Melanated Community Resource Hub and Network. What does that mean? We're here for each other.
Parlay with the people. All right, beautiful people. So we are back. So like I had mentioned at the top of the show, the guest that we have with us is no stranger to the OFC Podcast Radio. We have spoken just right at the top of the show. We mentioned the importance of infusing culture in our youth to ensure that they have a foundation for the future. We have no better representative of the culture than the one and only Shiata Lewis, artistic director at West Can. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it is my absolute pleasure. Thank you for being a guest with us today. So
no problem.
Now, before diving in, now what we like to do, give our guests an opportunity to share a little bit of your background with our listeners who may be tuning in for the first time and who've never met Shy, never met Shiata, the artistic director. So love, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. For those, like you said, I am no stranger to the show. I have been on here before, representing for West Can Folk Performing Company, but I'll keep it brief. My name is Shiata Lewis Rouse, and I am presently the artistic director for West Can Folk Performing Company. And West Can has been around in Montreal for close to 50 years, sharing and promoting Caribbean culture near and wide. And yeah, we teach classes on drumming, dancing, singing. We do workshops on storytelling. We have some fun interactive programs for seniors and for the youth and for adults as well. So we have a lot of things going on.
That, you see, and you can't help it just because West Can has a lot going on. Now, I did hand you off the mic so you could connect with the people on the personnel. I'm listening. I'm like, yeah. So, if we could take just, you know, for those who don't know, let's adventure is
a little deeper.
Let's a little bit deeper.
Let's peel back the onion. Okay, so I am a mother, mm-hmm. a proud mother, three. Mm-hmm. I am a wife mm-hmm. to a very dynamic and interesting. To say the least, the Pharaoh mm-hmm. Freeman, mm-hmm. and yeah, I grew up. I'm born in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. I grew up in Trinidad and Tobago. We spent many years there. We came back, continued our formal education here in Montreal, where we actually realized we were Canadian and we weren't Trinidadian. yeah, fell in love with WestCan, with our Caribbean culture, our roots. And interestingly enough, like while we lived in Trinidad, we had nothing to do with anything about cultural dance, cultural drumming, cultural sort. You know, we just didn't, we weren't in it. We weren't involved in that scene. And it really took us or we got introduced to it when we came to Montreal, right? And it's really, it feeds, okay, I'm gonna go into the story of WestCan and how WestCan started. Was out of the need for community. The newcomers to Montreal came and a lot of them felt, you know, kind of trapped in the rat race and not connected to the community, not connected to the culture that they left back home, whether they came from Jamaica, Barbados, Trinidad, Grenada, you name it. And one of the founding members, he actually expressed the sorrow and the sadness that he felt his first Christmas here, where nobody came by. Where, you know, normally being from Trinidad and Tobago, you have parang, you clean your house, you change your curtains, you do a whole bunch of stuff in preparation for Christmas, right? Where you share the season with family and friends, you eat, you cook all kinds of things that you don't usually eat throughout the year. So, you know, he did that. He created this huge spread and he was in the spirit of Christmas and the holidays. And that sense of community was so lacking that nobody came by, you know, his doors were open. He expected people to be popping by and saying hey and you know, sharing some time together. That didn't happen and it brought him such sorrow. And from that sorrow and from that pain, he decided to, you know, really go out there and actively pull some people together and open his house now to people coming together and singing parang music at Christmas time. And that's basically how the group started to grow. People heard about the group and said, hey, you know. And years later, into the 90s, when we come now, newcomers again, new returning comers to Canada, to Montreal. And again, you know, just looking, just trying to figure out what can we do? What is there for us to do here in Montreal? And my cousin took my older sister to WestCan. Then she then told me and I went. And so we kind of cascaded our entry into WestCan between the three of us.
And then the last person was Chantel. You
Yeah,
came in with the
Chantel
drum.
came into drum. She's like, ah, I see all your dancing, but I come to drum, you
Right.
know?
So that and it's amazing because again, like this is how life works. Like in Trinidad, you're the it's basically you live the culture. You don't even have to think about it. So it's like not like you're not gravitating to it. Here, out of almost necessity, it stood out. It called to you. Now, let me ask you yourself, what is your artistic background?
I've always loved theater. I came from theater. A good question. I don't think you even ever asked me these things.
I do this, I kind of do this, yeah. I do
All
this.
I always loved arts, loved performing at a very young age. Aside from doing WestCan, I also did many different styles of dance. So I was trained and did ballet, jazz, hip hop, of course. What else? Funk. I remember competing at the Footloose competitions in Ottawa and Quebec, and you know, just always I was very busy, just always in dance. Like this was my world in dance, in theater. I believe at the age of 17 or 18, we got a scholarship from BTW, my sister and I, and
Shadow Black Theater Workshop.
yeah, Black Theater Workshop. He gave us a start, and we met some amazing people, some young people like our age that are actually still involved in the arts. So I shout out to BTW because they were really able to select a strong core of young performers, young people who are passionate about performing arts, and develop our skills. And we had a training program. It was really a wonderful program, and I commend BTW for the work that they did. And that was almost 20 years ago, so over 20 years ago. So anyhow, always involved in theater productions, dance productions, and also in West Can. And unfortunately, with everything, the outside world, the criticisms, a young black woman, I have a body, I'm built, doing all this dance, my muscles developed and everything. So the critique and everything that you're getting from the ballet world, when I turn and I look at my Caribbean folk dance class and I'm looking at people of all sizes, all nationalities, all colors, you name it, and nobody's making any mention about this person's body is to this person's body is to that. So that was one of the things that I was like, that kind of opened up my eyes and really pulled me more towards the Caribbean folk. And then in learning and developing as a young artist, the freedom and flexibility that and the openness to the creative world that was allowed for me in that space to express myself and to also work with others in the folk arts, that was like invaluable. Like I've done so many things. We've traveled to so many places. We've worked with so many people, and I have to say that was partly, well, mainly due to my involvement with WestCan.
I know, and the thing is, I'm blessed in a sense to be able to experience the culture, like as a spectator, but also, as a husband, as a father, and what I've seen, and maybe you could speak a little bit to it, is your ability to connect with dancers, young and old. Can you speak a little about a bit about that for us? Like, what is the science behind it? What is it? What gives you that je ne sais quoi when it comes to connecting with the seniors and connecting with the, I get the complete opposite, little tweens, little not tweens, little children.
Little tiny mites. The little tiny dynamites. No, I think it comes down to maybe personality. But often, like anyway, so the in a nutshell, working with the seniors here in Canada and North America, often it is a sense of reconnecting to the culture, to stories, to movements, to rhythms that they've known as young children, but spent most of their lives here in North America. They raised their children here, they grew up here, they worked here, they built a life for themselves here, and now in their later years, they want to have fun. They want to reconnect with the culture that is so in them, but yet maybe they didn't have the time. Life happens and you don't have the time to really get involved in it. A lot of times the movements kind of they tell a story, right? They tell a story of the community, things that you might see, when we use our skirts, if we flick it in a certain way, we said that's when you want to be rude. And oh yes, when I was young, I want to be rude. I lift up my skirt and I flick it. So these kinds of connections to the movements help to solidify the magic that happens in dance classes and stuff. And then the little ones, they just come with dynamite. They have so much energy and they're so passionate, and they feel me. They give me energy, and they're really welcome into a space where they are working with people, different people, right? But mostly they are in a space with people that look like them, right? And just that simple fact, the representation is big. It helps them to really connect to what it is that's going on and feel comfortable. I remember coming to classes, one of our first classes or second classes, and two of the little girls, they stood there admiring each other's hair. Like, wow, your hair is braided like mine. And like I and I was like, wow, because really often maybe they're in daycare or in schools, grade one, grade two, and they may be the only little black girl in the class,
That's
right?
it,
So
right?
they're coming to school with their hair braided or in different styles and whatever. And it was really a marvel to see them like really appreciating, like, yeah, you go, girl. Like, wow, that's nice. So
And you know, and that's one of the points that I brought up right at the top of the show, is because we take it for granted, but being in North America, being in Canada, being in Montreal, Quebec, a lot of times our children, like it just so happens that they're growing up in schools that it's not like it's predominantly white or predominantly some another culture. Like, you know, you are blessed if you're able to grow up in a classroom of other people that look like you and that you guys have these cultural similarities. But unfortunately, that's not necessarily the case for a lot of us. So having programs like WESCAN that create that opportunity for our youth to be able to connect, it's something that parents should take it more than just just putting my child in a dance class. It's something where you're socializing your child within, you know, with other people that resonate, you know, like that share the same cultures and look like them, and you know that they could communicate with on a level. So that is huge. But you know, not just are you socializing them, you're also infusing a certain amount of culture and root into them. But now, beyond that, depending on their passion and how much they love it, you never know. You might be actually with another Shiata or another amazing drummer that you have that is sitting on your hands. And so you want to be able to expose them to these type of into these kind of spaces, into these type of programs. So and you know, so that actually brings us to what we're here to talk about now, is more what are the programs that WESCAN has available and that they're currently offering to the community, and how can we connect with you guys to be able to participate in these programs?
Right now we have our children's program that started at the beginning of this year, so it's not too late. Hurry up. Hurry up. We meet on Sundays. The children's program runs on Sundays, depending on your age group and what your classes you're interested in, anytime between 1 and 4 o'clock. We are presently
Nice after church. Good. I was wondering.
yes, after church, so you could go to church first, Barrow. And then after you finish church, you could come to practice. We have classes on dancing for children between the ages of 2 to 11 on Sundays. And then on Fridays, we have a teen or tween group that is for ages 12 to 16. And so they meet on Friday. So we are right now working out of the UNIA, which is in what's this called, Little Burgundy, or is it called Griffintown?
It's called a Burgundy,
Little
Tabamba.
Burgundy. Little Burgundy on Notre Dame Street West.
So let me ask you, because now obviously the little children, the little dynamite n near and dear to my heart. But when you speak about the teen class, let's talk about it, because I want to encourage that group. Like I want to, because I know the teens these days, there's a lot going on with teens. There's a lot of distractions, there's a lot of things happening, there's a lot of challenges that these teens are going through. And sometimes it's not easy to mobilize them or to encourage them to come out. So what can the teens look forward to when coming to a teen WESCAN class?
They can look forward to connecting with other teens, teens their age that have developed a skill set that sets them apart, and they're ready, willing, and able to teach their peers, teach other youths that are just like them how to do what they do. It is really a youth to youth led class,
Nice.
especially in the sense of the drumming. And we're training our young teens to actually start teaching dance. So this is part of the process. Also, I think there's something really empowering and magical that happens, especially if you have a child that is interested in the performing arts or presently involved in the performing arts, because at WESCAN, we and I'm saying this from my personal experience. When I was coming up as a young artist and in a lot of different schools and dancing and taking classes everywhere, at WESCAN, the element that really attracted me to WESCAN is the fact that we actually performed. We got to practice what we were practicing. We actually got to put it implement in. And go on stage and feel those jitters and work on our stagecraft and work with a team and learn about lighting and learn about blocking on stages and all of these things. And most importantly, learning how to connect with an audience, right? Breaking that fourth wall that they often have in theater, breaking that fourth wall and actually really connecting with the audience, putting your energy out there and getting it right back, right? So, if you have a teen at home and you see they're just sitting watching TikTok, right? So
Well, yeah, that might
if
actually no, we still have TikTok in
yeah,
Canada. It's just
they
in the
didn't
United States that's been banned. Apparently they have a lift, but whatever.
yeah. So, whatever, for lack of a better term, they're not doing much and you see the potential and you want them to get involved and connect with young people who are like much like them, creative. It's definitely a creative space, right? And we as adults, we kind of try to back away a little bit because we know that teens connect well with other teens. So where we have our teens at a point where they've definitely developed a skill set and now they're ready to teach and show other teens like, listen, you guys can do it too, and you guys can be even more creative than we are because like when we think about drumming is a form of expression through music. And when you learn that language, like the sky's the limit, right? You can really it's like rapping or like producing a beat and like there's so much that can come from it, especially when you're working with young perspectives. The sky's the limit. So I would urge parents, I'm speaking to you. Get your teens out of the house. Bring them yourself. Let them try it. Give them a try. Call us. You can reach us at 514-641-9149. Let us know you're going to pop in. We're there on Fridays from 7 to 9. And yeah, come by. Show face.
And so I think what's really cool is we know a lot of these teens nowadays, there's unfortunately, because of the fact that we're not as socialized as we used to, a lot of these young people have developed like these like anxiety, have developed things that even just meeting new people is a bit of a is kind of a thing for them. Like they're a bit uncomfortable with it. So I really appreciate the fact that WESCAN has created such a welcoming space, such a warm space where like one, you don't have to know what you're doing at all. Like you could just, you like music. Come to WESCAN because really it's like, yeah, oh, you have 2 feet, shoot, you might have 1 foot. Matter of fact, you'd be in a wheelchair, come to WESCAN regardless. The point is, there's it's a welcoming space for youth who want to connect and who are artistically inclined in some kind of way. And you'll learn. And just creating that space where teens could connect with teens, I think it's an amazing formula. One of the things like I'm putting it out there. I want to call out some businesses, guys. We need to start creating some incentives and give these youth some prizes for coming out and for participating. And just because society is not doing that, matter of fact, society is doubling down against a lot of these youth, and they're going through different things like and society's almost like reinforcing a lot of these negative habits and stuff like that. So what we really want to do is reward them for making the effort, reward them for coming out, encourage them, support them in doing that. But now the other huge part is the fact that you guys get to perform. That is huge. Like that is one of the things that like it's like when you play a sport, it's great to go to practice all the time, but shoot, the games though, right? Like when you're able to get in the ring and play the game or get on the court or get on the field and actually have your game. And that's what I associate the being able to perform to when it comes to the arts and stuff like that is actually it's showtime. And again, like you had mentioned it. I was blessed to be able to participate and go with WestCan to Trinidad to be able to see them performing, to see the youth performing on these on this huge stage, and for them to be able to have that experience. Now, again, once you join WestCan, this is something that this could be your reality as well. Obviously, it's about the practice and it's about plugging in, but the opportunity is huge. So definitely, I really want to encourage you guys out there. Anybody who's listening, you have a youth at home, boy or girl. Bring them out. It's not just dancing, because it's dancing and it's drumming, right? And there's no better time.
Theater as well.
Oh,
Yeah.
talk about you. You didn't talk about it. Where you at?
Of
What?
course, it's theater. It's definitely theater. We have storytelling and theater. It's a well-rounded performing arts. So everything in terms of telling our stories, educating people about our traditions and so on in a unique and new perspective, in a new way. And I think that there are no other age group that is willing to take up or ready to take up that charge than teens. You know, the creative aspect and the knowledge base and them learning about their culture and then how are you going to show it to other people and teach other people. I think the teen group really excels at that portion of it.
I love it. So if you could, again, one more time, just provide the contact in terms of how people can get in contact with you if they want more information about WestCan, they want to participate. I know we're saying the senior program, that it's not active right now. Right now it's the adult and the children.
No, we do have a senior program that also operates out of the UNIA Center, and that's on Thursdays. So Thursday during the day, between 12 and 1, we also have a small light refreshments. You know, it's 12 o'clock and right in the middle of the day, and we're doing activities like drumming, dancing, a literature group, and storytelling. So it's a great platform. It's a great space for seniors to get together and share their stories and learn something new, learn some new skills.
I love that. I love that. I love that. We'll make it a point to also share this schedule on all our platforms. The OFC is really proud to have WestCan as a partner. You guys are definitely doing the job in terms of just keeping the culture alive, planting the seed in our little that firecrackers to our teens, supporting the adults as well as the seniors. I remember back in the time I used to participate in a sweat class.
Yeah, that still
Like
happens on
that.
Mondays.
What? That still happens on
Yes.
board. My
You could
knees.
go.
Oh, good. Yay. Yay.
You were
So,
good.
let's talk
You
about it. So,
were
how does the sweat class work? And who's the sweat class for?
The sweat class is for adults. Adults suggest get an opportunity to come out and sweat. So you will sweat. It's cardio, it's toning. We focus on having fun, burning calories, just moving, right? We just keep moving. Even if some of the movements or combinations are a little bit difficult, you can adjust. We adapt things as we go along. You're just in a space and where you're motivated to just move, right? Which is often sometimes lacking. Sometimes we have these jobs, we're working in front of a screen all day, and it's great to just get an opportunity to get a good sweat. Like open out your pores and just release some of those toxins that we were talking about earlier. Later. Okay, so yeah, the sweat class. Yeah. And so yeah, we'll share the flyer with all of our schedules so you can post it on your social medias. We'll greatly appreciate that. And yeah, you can also check out our website, which is westcanfolk.com. That's WESTCAN. FOLK.com. And we receive emails at westcanfolk@gmail.com. And you can give us a call. Our phone number is 514-641-9149. Facebook and Instagram, Westcanfolk.
Well, I have to say, I'm super blessed. Like I end the shows usually by thanking my family. You're a huge part of it, so I definitely thank you for those who don't know. We're celebrating 19 years of marriage this year, and it's been a fun and exciting 19 years. I people who know my background would have never so assumed that I would have been so connected to the culture like I am right now. But it is a well, no, don't get me wrong. I love a fete. People know that about me. But it's a, but I am proud to see your growth, to be able to see the energy you inject into the youth, into our future. Every dancer that has an opportunity to come across you has only amazing things to say about you. So you know, so it is awesome to be able to see and to witness it from this side. So now, as I like to tie up these shows, or these interviews, I always like giving our guests an opportunity to leave our listeners with some words of empowerment. So can you please bless us with some words of empowerment?
Sure. I didn't prepare anything, but just off the top, I would say it's all about today. So it's all about today. Whatever decisions you make today, however you want to steer the course of your life, it's really all about today. What are we doing today? What are you doing right now? What movements are you going to be doing for that will impact and affect your future in a positive way, of course, right? So that's a it's all about today.
Well said. We are living in the now. So with that, guys, we are going to take a pause for the cause. As matter of fact, I think it'll leave us with a song from MTD Solo, "Living in the Now," and then we'll take another pause for the cause, and we'll be back with Gina the Great and "Ungrind My Gears."
You know what really grinds my gears?
Actually, it's time to ungrind those gears. Let's get into some interesting facts, tips, and a whole lot of fun with Gina the Great.
What the facts is going on? So I have maybe two facts for you guys today, but they correlate. They correlate. I don't know if everyone knows this out there, but your largest organ in your body is your skin. And what that does, it does absorb everything that's, you know, that's around it, touches it, or put onto it, right? And there's a lot of testing going on in a lot of the products that we're ingesting, but there's also a lot going on the things that we are putting on ourselves. And this particular video that I'm going to share is talking about how certain products are marketed to specifically Black women. And I don't know if if I've ever spoken about it on a show, but you know, there's a big revelation on the things that we do for ourselves in terms of that we call part of our culture, like doing our braids, but using that kinecolon is the stuff that's it has so much toxins in it, and you're putting in your hair at the crown of your body, and that stuff is absorbed, right? And they say at the minimum, before you put braiding hair in your hair, you're supposed to wash it, and you know, try to remove those toxins. But you know, let's listen to what is being said about how Black girls are being poisoned by beauty products.
These products that are marketed specifically to Black girls contain some of the worst ingredients I have ever seen. And I think it should be outlawed. Like you said, the fragrances, the endocrine disruptors, these harsh detergents, some formaldehyde releasers. Formaldehyde's a human carcinogen. What place does it have in a beauty and personal care product? It doesn't. It needs to be removed. There needs to be better regulations and better protection for vulnerable populations.
I was doing some research, and I looked at Harvard Health, and it said 50% of products advertised to Black women contain endocrine disruptors, which are those disruptors that are going to impact their hormones, increase their chance of things like cancer, infertility, et cetera, compared to roughly 7% that are advertised to white women. And these endocrine disruptors can impact fertility and increase their chance of getting cancer.
So there's really something to be said about that, because a lot of Black women, when they go and like check their fertility and their uterus, there's a lot of stuff that's found in there. And then when you're thinking about the relaxers, the braids, the weaves, and all these things that end up having a lot of parabens, formaldehyde, as she mentioned, synthetic fragrances, all these things are being absorbed in your body, and they're not, they're toxins. They're basically toxins. And so already we don't have a great food system. The fact that we're also, and like, here's the thing too, it's not just that, but like your beauty products that you use, the shampoos that you use, the conditioner. So it's not even only the fact that, oh, how you decide to wear your hair. No, it's how you wash it. It's what you put on it. It's what you put in your skins and all these things, all that stuff is being absorbed. And so you really want to try and focus on the more natural beauty products through and throughout for your skin, for your hair, and all these things combined.
You see, sorry, go ahead. Sorry, finish your thought.
No, go ahead, please. Because I'm gonna move on to something else that has to, that we're seeing a lot. That goes beyond just Black women, but like, yes, speak on it.
Like, this is such a concern of mine, and I've been talking about this on so many different levels because, like, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. I can't necessarily put a proper finger on it, so to speak, but for some weird reason, the beings out there who are the powers that be, quote unquote, I'm going to quote them as the former powers that be, because they're slowly, they have lost their reign on humanity. But the point is that they have done a good job of poisoning or attempting to poison us in almost every single thing. And why it's such a concern is that you have parents that are putting this stuff in their children's hair, right? Without necessarily even taking the time to understand the long-term negative impacts that it's having. And it's unfortunate, but we're at a point now where we can't necessarily trust these big industries, because they have proven time and time again that they're not looking out for us. They're not doing things that's in our best interest. Like, I'm so grateful for that natural movement that kicked in and women stopped perming their hair. Like, for the longest time, it was a norm to put these crazy chemicals on your head to basically half kill your hair, your head follicles, and like, you forget it on too long, you're burnt out your scalp. Like, what kind of, but that's what society has deemed as normal and was pushing out, and that's what we normalize and internalize, and we're trying to do that. Guys, it's like, by all means, by any means, like, at this point, we don't have a choice but to be super vigilant about everything, like, from what we're putting on our skin to what we're eating. There's more and more things coming out saying, oh yeah, oops, by mistake, we poisoned that whole fleet of eggs that just came out, or that, like, all that meat that just was distributed. Sorry, guys, you have it in your house, you might want to get rid of it, because, hey, we come to find out it's poisoned. And, oh, the bread, watch out for this bread, there was this and this found in the bread. Like, something's got to give, you know? So it's like, we're at a point where we have to be hyper-vigilant.
Speaking of chickens or eggs, I was thinking about chickens. I'm trying to remember. I think it was the Netherlands. Don't quote me on the actual city or the country that did it, but there was a city or country that basically offered up chickens to households. And those who agreed to have the chicken, they, like, whoever wanted one or a couple, they would take them. And that city was able to reduce waste by a large percentage, because all your food waste or whatnot just went to the chickens. And then you eat the chicken, and then you laid your eggs, and you're also not giving the chicken a bunch of junk either, because, I mean, you got to feed it like natural foods and stuff. But chickens do naturally, like, they get rid of waste.
That's it.
And that's what it is. They reduced their landfill.
The dump where they threw all the garbage.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So, as I said, I had a two part, and this is about fast fashion. Now, I understand that we are in a space and time where things are costly, and that can and will include fashion and the allure. And again, I'm putting myself in the same basket, because I promise you I have bought from Shein. I promise you I have bought from fast fashion. But Temu, I've actually bought from AliExpress. Nothing that I wore, but like, I've bought on that too. But Temu, Shein, AliExpress, fast fashion. Here's a little fun fact about that.
I'm concerned that this is going to be the new norm. South Korean authorities tested over 100 different products from Temu, Shein, and AliExpress and found harmful chemicals and carcinogens in those products. Some examples would be a Temu sandal that had 11 times the permissible limit of lead in it, and Shein had a pair of shoes that was 229 times the legal limit of phthalates in it. You know, we hear things about how, like, oh, be careful because it can affect your reproductive organs or your thyroid. And you go, well, it's a shirt or a pair of pants. What? How does that work? If I take a tablet of arsenic once, probably feel a bit weird and then be fine. But if I take a tablet of arsenic once a day and slowly up my dosage, eventually I'm going to start having side effects. It's fun to shop, but when buying these products, you need to be cautious of your long-term health.
Wow. Wow. The and clothes like, oh, too? Clothes and shoes?
Clothes and shoes. It's the clothing and the shoes. So, and you tell yourself, like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's just shoes. It's like he explained it. It's just when you add little by little to your day-to-day, it seeps in everything. And, you know, I miss the days. I didn't realize it when I was younger, right? At one point, when we moved to Toronto, and my sister and I moved to Toronto in our teens, in our early teens, and we went to a Catholic school because it was like the French system that they had out there. It was Catholic schools, and they were just like, oh, you got to, you know, wear a uniform. And we're just like, that goes against our self-identity. Da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, we complained about that for maybe 2 weeks because the joy of just having a uniform and I don't have to think about, what am I wearing today or what have you? Listen, get yourself some good quality stuff and rotate those bad boys. You know what I mean?
Right.
You don't... and I'm saying this because I'm doing a lot of cleansing of my stuff and I started reading a lot of labels. Our clothes are so synthetic. Nothing's natural and it's seeping the energy out of you. And I remember talking about this way back when to find cotton socks was like, it was a Where's Waldo situation in the store. Like, how come none of these socks have cotton, or why most of them blend? Like 100% cotton socks are just like good luck.
You're right.
Good luck, Chuck, you know.
And we don't realize
you just muted yourself.
Sorry about that. I'm gonna say it has to be said. We're at war, people. We are at war, and the neighbor and the people who are worrying again, like, we don't even realize we're at war. That's what's happening. Okay, guys, we're at war, and they found all kind of cool creative ways to destroy us without us
Trojan horses realizing
it. Trojan horses.
That's yeah, like your, they found like all the Trojan horses. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bro, it's like you're putting on the clothes and the clothes is killing you. It's like you're and not for nothing. Again, this is nothing against our Chinese brothers and sisters. But we do know they're a superpower and they're super strategic and they're good at playing the long game.
Sure, but you know what? I'm not even taking it because it's not just China. I mean, we do get stuff from other places too. But just like anywhere else that you can buy, one, you can find it. You can find fast fashion here in America as well too. But the cost of labor is lower in the Asian and Indo-Asian environments or South Asian environments as well. But there's levels to these bezels. Like, you can still purchase goods from China at high quality that doesn't have all these things. And if you don't want to, if for you spending more to not be sure out in China, then like, yes, buy locally, buy where you know and spend more. Because your health, it may cost more at the forefront, but your health will cost you way more. And I mean, what was the savings when you're dead?
Well, that's it. Well said. And, you know, and I get, and to your point, so we can't say we can't point a finger at China and be like, China is doing this, but
no, these are businesses just like anywhere else.
I guess what my concern is that, again, the war is, I guess, the corporate against the people, where it's cheaper to produce certain things and send it out to the masses and we're consuming. If we can do anything for ourselves, at this point, to save ourselves and to save our future coming up, it's to be more selective about where we're spending our money and what we're spending it on. The quick fixes have long-term negative impacts. So maybe it is time, like you're saying, that we invest more local, invest in more quality products. And I know some of these people who sell quality are having a hard time because they can't compete against the machines that are selling things
Yeah.
that are just, anyways, you already know where I'm going. But the point is, it's like, let's support the local person, let's support the quality, let's support ourselves, because yeah, in the long term, they are doing things that are preventing us from having babies. They're doing things, they're putting things in our food and their clothing that, yeah, it's going to take us out in the long
Yeah,
term.
absolutely. I want to take this opportunity to insert here because in the last few weeks or in the month of January, because I mean we're February now, but in the month of January, the whole TikTok ban and in the US moving to Red Note or something like that. Yeah, the other Chinese app, which is the actual Chinese TikTok. And it's funny because everyone's always like, oh, China, communist China, this, that, and third, and the propaganda and like the government saying the XYZ. The Americans who went on this Red Note app, they were getting comments from Chinese people like, hey, is it true that like you guys pay more for healthcare or that you don't have free healthcare, or is that Chinese propaganda? And I was like, hey, is it true that you guys only have like 10 days vacation, or is that Chinese propaganda? And like the Americans were kind of just like gobsmacked, like, oh, because here we're told that you guys are the oppressive regime and XYZ, and we're being fed a certain propaganda about the communist countries around the world. I was like, this is why
Wow.
they banned it. This is why they came together. And then somebody else was saying, it's like, it's funny how the Republicans and the Democrats were able to come together so quickly to ban TikTok, but they can't come together for universal health care or gun control or any of these things that are actually killing people. Never mind data mining. And I think all of that came to about because, oh, and then they started looking at all the politicians who before banning TikTok went and bought stocks in Meta. So by banning TikTok, obviously people are going to have to go back to the Instagrams, the Facebooks, and the Meta worlds of it all.
It's all
And
dollars and cents. It comes back
all
down to the
dollars and
paper.
cents.
Yeah, it's all dollars and cents. Because it's funny as you're speaking, and I was like, there's definitely a hidden agenda. It's not just about
Oh,
banning TikTok.
absolutely.
It's because, and then yeah, you just hit it
Absolutely.
on the
Yeah.
head.
Because the reason why because they told TikTok that they had to sell their American version to the US because the data is being mined out there. But like you guys have no idea how much of your data is being mined in the Meta. Like that's insane. But let me flip the switch because we talked about these corporations that are doing such horrible things. I want to talk about the ones that are doing the right thing, excuse me. Last week, a week before last, I spoke about the company, the Italian company that treated their employees right. And I found the excerpt. I'm not going to play it because it's an excerpt from Michael Moore's documentary, Where to Invade Next. So I'd suggest going to check out his documentaries. He's done some pretty interesting stuff. And so he went to it was Lardini. So that's the name of the Italian designer. And he asked them, like, if you did it the American way, you can make more money. And like they responded again, like, what's the point of being richer? I want to see people smile and build human relationships. If I can have a good vacation, so should they, and have really be relieved of stress and come back to work relaxed. And so I wanted to, I know I said I'd come back because I spoke about it. I alluded to this company, and they were founded in 1978. It was an Italian luxury brand known for top quality tailoring, sophisticated design. These are handmade things. These are things that are made with love, and it has a caring space in the owners and their employees, and they have that great relationship. And again, I had said like people didn't really get sick. People went home for 2 hour lunches and came back and did what they needed to do. Everyone was happy. I want to highlight Bob's Red Mill. You know Bob's Red Mill? Have
Sounds
you
familiar, but
seen?
remind me.
Yeah, so you've seen them in the markets, I'm sure. They make like flowers and have grains. A lot of times you'll see them in the organic aisle. This is very like, you know, farm to table type of products that they do. And so Bob's Red Mill's owner, Bob, before his death, he transferred full ownership of his business to his 500 employees. So what he did, yes. So he was approached by a number of food giants who were willing to pay him hundreds of millions of dollars to acquire more than 200 products in over 70 countries worldwide, but he wasn't interested. He said that after succeeding beyond his wildest dreams, he wanted to create an ESOP, which is like an employee ownership plan, that distributed the stocks in the company to the people who worked there. Their annual revenue last year was $53.8 million. And distributed across the 500 employees, revenue per employee ratio was over $107,000. And so his last recording, So in one of his last recordings, he just said, you know, he urged people to give back to your community, because success isn't sweet if it's not shared with others. So shout out to Bob.
How does family feel about it?
Pardon me?
That's dope. I guess his family was already well off. So
they're probably that's dope. Well, I mean, he was a farmer. He came from humble beginnings, and you took the 500 people who were with you and built it out, which I'm sure his family was part of that too. And like, we built this together, and so we like, that's community, right? That's how it was supposed to be built. And one of the commenters had said, you know, there's a reason why there's never been any recalled on his products. The employees are valued and they have pride in their work. And so when we talked about the eggs being recalled and all these things, when you're talking about big corp and greed, that's when you have recalls. And by the way, just so that the public knows, recalls are not recalled when you find the problem. Things are recalled when you've done an opportunity cost, and if it's going to cost you more to not recall it versus just paying off people who might come and sue you in the future.
Damn, Gina, is today the expose the corporates day?
Jeez. Hello. Because that's what I found out about like car recalls. Like when they have parts and stuff, they do an assessment. Is it going to cost this? Like, is it going to what's going to cost less? Recalling it or risking getting lawsuits, claims, and then like, you know, and then just settling outside of court? We probably pay less than having to recall, and then having to recall all these things or bring all these vehicles to get updated.
It's funny. I learned that from watching Fight Club. Shout out to Fight Club.
Oh, remember, we'll
at the beginning. Yeah. Yo, that's what he did for a living. He was so he explains it while all kind of things are going on. He actually while he's talking, he's explaining how the car industry works and what they actually do. That's so crazy, because other things are happening, but you're like, but he's really breaking down like, yeah, this is how the industry works, guys.
Yeah, they don't care that they sold you a death machine. They just care if it's going to cost them more to have to recall it or not. Yeah. Okay, well, I kind of twisted my motivation of Bob's Mill and the Lardini family, but we're gonna get right into some fun games. It's trivia time. Are you ready for trivia?
Yeah.
Are you ready for trivia?
Guy who's joined us.
Hello, hi. I'm ready.
Hi. All right, so we're gonna get into it. These are multiple choice questions. Except for the final one. The final one will be the person who has the closest answer will win. No, I'm sorry. I have two closest. I'll let you know. Question number one. What crucial hair product appeared for the first time in the 1960s? A, gel. B, hairspray. C, hair dye. Or D, curlers.
You said in the 60s?
Mm-hmm.
Gel.
Oh, I said curlers.
Unfortunately, you're both wrong. Hairspray.
Really?
Hairspray. Yes. In the age of the what is that? The beehives and such?
Oh yeah, true. You said the 60s. Yeah, no. I think the Jerry curl was only like in the 70s, 80s, right? Or like the 80s. That's when the
drippy curls. Yeah, that's probably when gel and ting was real important in the minutes. Yeah.
Did you hairspray?
Yeah. Question number two. What common hygiene aid was invented while the inventor was in prison? A, a toothbrush, B, toilet paper, C, wash rag, or D, soap?
Soap.
Fair, you say soap?
It was invented while the inventor was in prison?
Oh, while the inventor was in prison.
Soap.
I don't know. I would... I'd go with wash rag.
You want to go with wash rag? It was actually the toothbrush.
What? How did he do it?
You know what? I should have Googled the history behind that. And as I was asking, I was just like, I wonder, you know, XYZ. But I'll come back next week and maybe give a little bit of background on the inventor of the toothbrush. So next question. What piece of computer equipment was invented by Douglas Engelbart? A, monitor, B, keyboard, C, mouse, D, HDMI port.
Mouse.
Pharaoh says mouse.
I say...
Stop cheating.
You said what?
USB.
USB. So we have someone with a point on the board. It's actually a mouse.
Yes.
Okay. Finally got a point.
Yes.
Finally.
Oh my gosh. You took me.
Next question. What piece of aquatic transportation was invented by Robert Fulton in 1803? A raft, a jet ski, a catamaran, or a steamboat?
What year?
1803.
1803. I'm going to go to catamaran.
Catamaran. Shadow?
I'm going to go... Sorry, tell me the options again.
The options? Raft, jet ski, catamaran, steamboat.
Say jet ski.
Jet ski?
Jet ski.
I'm just glad no one said raft, because I'm pretty sure rafts were created before 1803. And definitely not a jet ski. But it wasn't a catamaran either. It was a steamboat.
Actually, I'm not sure what a catamaran is. And that I was trying to process of elimination. I was like, maybe that's what came up back in 1900.
When I said jet ski, I meant like, you know, when with the boat pulling you.
What? Okay.
Never mind. Go ahead.
Have you ever been on a booze cruise? You ever done a booze cruise in the Caribbean?
No.
They're usually on catamarans, so they're kind of like, they're very open-ended boats, and they look kind of like rectangular-ish.
Okay. Yeah. I know
it's like a Timu yacht. No, yachts still look like.
No, well, I love, you know what, yachts, you know what? I'm thinking that movie, that's like, it's a cartoon movie based in Louisiana. The cartoon, the frog, the thing.
Oh, Princess and the Frog?
Yeah. I for some reason, I'm picturing that kind of boat. Am I off? No?
I don't remember the boat, but.
Okay. Anyway, but Google, the point is, there was none of those. It wasn't that either.
It was none of those. It was a steamboat. Yes. All right, closest answer wins. In what year was the yo-yo invented?
Yo-yo.
1980. Ferris says 1980.
1803.
Did you say
1803? That's what she said.
That's
what I said. Okay, well, that would have been 123 years before. It was created in 1928. Pharaoh, you are the closest.
Oh, okay.
19 when?
1928.
Oh, so it's an old.
You said 1980.
I know. I thought it was more modern than that.
Because no, don't you? Did you ever remember seeing like a yo-yo where it was like a wooden block that looked like two cones stuck together and like a thread?
Yeah,
everything wasn't so, you know, so modernized
and aerodynamic,
back in prehistoric times.
Yeah.
Not prehistoric. Yeah,
you thought Jesus used a yo-yo. That's what you're like. Jesus was using a yo-yo back in the
like reading scriptures.
All right, we got 18, two okay. more. We got two more questions. Next one: what important breakfast making device was originally patented? Can't even say that word properly. In Minnesota in 1919. The waffle iron, the pop-up toaster, the bread maker, or the microwave?
1919 in Minnesota. It was the... You said Minnesota?
I'm going to say waffle iron.
You're going to say waffle iron?
Okay. What are the other options?
Waffle iron, pop-up toaster, bread maker, microwave.
I'm going to go with bread maker just because Shai took waffle iron and I wanted to say that.
You want to have a different answer.
Yeah, just to mix it up.
Well, it's not quite Lego my ego, but it is a pop-up toaster.
Oh.
So it wasn't a waffle maker.
Mm-mm. Wow.
It's a toaster. Yeah.
Why did I think that was more modern, too? I guess it's like... 1919,
y'all popping bread already?
Y'all popping bread?
I still have a toaster of it.
That's enough.
Right? Facts. Final question, nearest answer wins. In what year were the roller skates invented by John Joseph Merlin?
Oh, no, there's not multiple choice. Okay.
No.
I'm going to say around 1960s.
You say the
1960s?
I'm going to say 1940s.
So, Farrah, you said 1940s, and Shiata, you said 1960? Well, Shadow, you were exactly 200 years off. It was 1760. So for
what?
Oh,
yo,
I should have said 18. You know,
now's the time we need to say 1803 for real.
Yo, wow, that got it. All these things, yo. First of all, my bad, people from back in the day.
yeah,
apparently you guys were more up to the times than I thought. That you guys were just
yeah, we're doing stuff, dirt.
Huh?
You said sticks and dirt.
I don't know. I don't know.
Wow. Well, congratulations, Farrah. You've won today's trivia.
Woohoo!
And on that, I grind, you grind, and sometimes we need to ungrind together. That's Ungrind My Gears with Jiva the Great. We'd like to thank our special guest. This episode is possible thanks to the awesome people at CKUT, the OFC, and Drew in the Stew. Do you have any shout out
to my West Can crew, my homegirl getting married. Yeah, everybody, all the best for the new year. It's now started.
I'd like to shout out the Aquariuses of the world. Yeah, Capricorn season's done. It was great. Even though I did say this is my birthday year, but I will acknowledge that we have moved into Aquarius. So shout out to y'all.
Yeah. Shout out to the community, the OFC community, for always coming together and supporting each other and for encouraging the show. Definitely another shout out to my family forever for always being there to support and encourage me and my my shenanigans. Grateful always to the ancestors, and shout out to everybody who participated in the events that went on throughout January. There's a lot of awesome initiatives, a lot of awesome events. Another shout out to Nadia, Dima Blur to Nadia. Shout out to Kim Ferguson and Mad Poetics. Shout out to just, everybody who's doing it and who's aspiring. And now as we're, embarking into this this Black history and stuff like that. Now you guys keep your eyes out. We're going to be pushing out the OFC community flag. It's a sign of unity, it's a sign of empowerment, it's a sign for us to be able to come together as a human species, so to speak, and acknowledge those who came before us. So I'm really I'm grateful for this. So shout out to you all. Peace and blessings.
Kings and queens, this was the OFC Podcast Radio with Farrah Hammond Freeman, Queen Kaya, and myself, Gina the Great. We're on every Thursday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM. Hopefully you got your dose of entertainment, enlightenment, and empowerment. Stay blessed and highly favored.
OFC
Podcast Radio.